Hello, welcome to the Lightly in PHP podcast. This is episode 26, and this time I have here as my co-host our inspiration, our leader, Special K, our guru. Hello, Michael. How are you doing?
Hello. I am too legit to quit. Oh, sorry. Too legit. I had the mirroring wrong. I'm sorry. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can listen to you fine.
I get that a lot.
That's MC Hammer, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Last time you mentioned that, I had to research.
Yeah.
It's so old. It's my time, but it was still old. And
please, Manuel, don't hurt him. Yeah.
Alzheimer's is attacking me again.
I've got my parachute pants on below, so I will just, you'll only see me from the neck up, but I've got my parachute pants on.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
We are here to talk about PHP, and we are going to start talking about the latest topics.
Yes.
Seeing things that happen in the PHP world recently, now that PHP 5.4 has practically been stabilized, there are only a few releases with mostly bug fixes. There is this release of 5.4.5 that it's basically that, and there is nothing much to say there. You mentioned there were 30 bugs that were fixed, including some security related flaws, and there is nothing else to mention about it. It has been released 5.3.15. They mentioned practically the same release text, so
yeah.
I suppose the same security bugs have been fixed or backported or whatever they call it these days. I don't know.
I'm only running 5.3.13, so I am out of date.
Well, I think you're fine as long as you'll run 5.3.11 at least, because there was that major fix on the that problem that could bring down your web server.
I think I only went to 5.3.13 a few days ago. I think I was at 5.3.3 for a long time.
Yeah.
So
you mean in your production servers?
Yeah, I upgraded accidentally the other day. And I guess it's a good thing now I'm on 5.3. I was upgrading something else, and of course in the Linux world you can't just get one thing. You need to get 18 other packages that are all related. But
oh yeah,
I'm up to date. Well, I'm not on 5.4 yet. I haven't done anything. I haven't even installed 5.4 on my test machines yet. So I feel like I'm way behind.
In my production server, I compile PHP manually. So.
You do everything manually because you are Manuel.
No, thank you.
Oh, English.
That was an awesome joke.
English adverbs, I tell you.
Well,
what
anyway,
can they do? Okay.
Anyway, I compile it manually so I can upgrade to a specific PHP version without depending on other packages, unless it's something new in a newer version. That depends on some package on the system that I need to have compiled. But that is great because it gives more flexibility, but I have to full server control. You mean you have it on dedicated servers? Or?
Yeah. I manage my stuff, but I tend to just use the most. It's not like I have a whole data center or anything, but I have a few servers, and it tends to be either CentOS or Ubuntu. So it's either Yum upgrade or apt-get upgrade update. I should say. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's more flexible. After all, you don't have to think much. And I also depend on some extensions that might not be available, and that is also a good way to introduce you one of the next topics, which is related with accelerator.
There you go. Look, that segue was awesome. And that's not something that somebody has said to anybody at Amazon.
I didn't plan for that. Anyway,
it just happens.
The topic that I want to bring up, it's a bit out of order, but now that I mention it, it's about the EE Accelerator PHP caching extension that I use. in my servers. And well, this is the follow-up of the original extension that was called many years ago Turk MMCache. And it was originally developed by Dmitry Stogov, but then he went to work to Zend, I think, and then it stopped working on this extension. Somebody else picked up. Anyway, what is new on this? Well, I cannot call it a release because it's still in GitHub. They did not officially announce the latest version that already supports PHP 5.4. Which is something that required some changes, some updates to the code to integrate better with the version 5.4. That you need to. There are many, I think, from what I understood, there are many changes in the PHP extensions interface that required some work. It's just not a mere recompile. Since I had that on my server, I had to also recompile that manually. As long as some other extension, I think it's Upload Progress, which comes also separately, and also JSON. JSON, this is a bit surprising to me. I thought JSON was built in the PHP main PHP distribution, but if you don't enable the extension at compile time, it does not become available. And at least it's yeah. Not separate from the distribution. It's as it was used to be in the past. And since nowadays encoding and decoding JSON is become very important. If you compile it manually, you have to explicitly enable the switch in the Figure script that compiles PHP with whatever extensions. You usually do not compile PHP manually, right?
No. I used to years ago, but I have when no need to.
When you had time.
To. Well, I used to years ago. I just don't have any. I don't have any need to. So the defaults and the few extra extensions that I can yum update or yum install, that's plenty for me.
Yeah. Well, but talking about PHP extensions, this is another segue for the next topic that. I wanted to talk about, which is related with the APC extension, which is also another extension for caching compiled PHP code at runtime, which is very important. Every site, even not so busy sites, need to have a PHP code caching extension running, or else it probably run very inefficiently. And so far, APC is not being bundled in the main PHP distribution because core developers claimed that it was not quite ready. There are some serious bugs still creeping in this version. And what happened recently, just a few days ago, Rasmus Lerdorf, as you all know, the creator of PHP, posted a message. Basically, it is a call for help of other people to track, help tracking bugs that exist still in APC and then preventing it from being shipped with PHP 5.4. That was the original plan. Actually, APC was meant to be shipped built-in PHP 6, but since PHP 6 original plan was cancelled, it was anticipated to PHP 5.4, but with the bugs that they claim that are preventing it to ship, as it is not quite a stable release for such an important PHP component. So it is not still being shipped, and everybody that would like to use APC would like to see all those bugs fixed so it becomes sort of a mainstream extension. because it sort of hurts PHP in terms of performance benchmarks, especially in comparison with other languages. Everybody that wants to show how PHP does in comparison with other languages sometimes compares with an unfair setup.
I don't think we need to rush into this, though. I mean, APC has only been around 13 years. It's pretty new. So, yeah, there might still be a bug in it someplace. So until it's 110% bug-free, we better not bundle it. Because that would mean that PHP would have bugs in it, and PHP doesn't ship with bugs either.
No, absolutely.
I understand the motivation. I just don't think we need to rush into this.
Right.
Yeah.
There's no rush after all. You can always wait for the next millennium, and maybe then, probably
maybe
the one bug of more or less, it will not affect PHP then, I think. Those are criteria presented by core developers. Sometimes I do not quite follow on those criteria, but that seems to be the criteria that is being applied currently. And anyway, Rasmus is calling for help.
That's scary.
To fix those bugs. It seems they are complicated because they deal with probably memory corruption with competing tasks accessing cache entries simultaneously. He just posted that message that I will post in the show notes of the podcast, so people can learn a bit about the techniques that he is presenting to help debugging complicated bugs that are still hanging in this extension. Well, until you figure that PHP APC extension is ready to be used, you can always try eAccelerator, as I mentioned before.
Or Zen Server.
Well, Zen Server, doesn't it came with APC?
No, they've got their own accelerator.
I thought they were actually shipping the APC with the free version. Maybe I'm seeing things.
You are wrong, is what that is. You can't whitewash. Oh, I'm seeing things. Oh, I've made a judgment, an error. No, you're wrong. You're wrong. R-O-N-G, wrong.
No, well, I could swear I've seen APC in the free version.
You could swear a lot of stuff, but yeah, whatever.
But I only tried the Zen Server once just for benchmarking for an article that I published about comparison of compilers, PHP compilers. Well, anyway, that's it about the APC extension. Now I'd like to move on to another topic, which is more related about the possible features of upcoming PHP versions. There is one feature that I'm still struggling to try to understand how exactly it is supposed to work. The name of it, they are calling it a generators, but I'm not sure even why it is called generators.
You gotta keep them generated. I think it goes with the song from 19 years ago.
Well, maybe
that's what I think. But
maybe it's related with the purpose that the typical purpose of the use of this feature. Well, basically, what it is meant, from what I understood, is to help on iterating over data or whatever, something that needs to be split in small chunks, like, for instance, reading large files. And basically, they introduce a new keyword named yield.
Yield, like that.
I think I'm not sure if it is the same meaning of the yield keyword in Python.
I think it's meant to be similar.
Yeah, well, basically,
you're returning this value at this moment in time to something else, but you're not actually returning control of the program all the way. That loop, for example, on your screen there, that loop is going to continue to execute,
right,
but that value in the yield is going to be exposed to the code that was calling it, if that makes
well,
any sense.
Well, this is the tricky part to understand, because how would this work in practice? Does it mean that the function would return there when you have the yield line and return that value?
No. Well, the example here is weird, because yield line would give back that should give back that
line value, right?
That value, that dollar line value, to something. If something else was calling this in an iterative or in a loop fashion, then it would be like it was getting that value returned to it all the time. But that get lines from file function would keep running. The odd thing here is that they're saying yield line, but because you're doing it multiple times, what you're getting back is effectively actually get lines from file. That's weird, because it looks, and I didn't read this particular screen, but it's not running ahead of time, but it's acting like it would be giving back an array. So it's almost, in that case, that's almost behaving like not an interface.
Well, I'm actually thinking to improve the iterator right now, interface, right?
Iterator, that's what I was thinking of, yes. Interface, but I was thinking of... anyway,
well, it's a bit confusing for me how the flow would work in practice. Maybe the examples here are not good enough to explain it. And if I just suspect that if something is too hard to explain, it probably won't get many users adopting it, because they would have an hard time to understanding what they are doing.
This would be. Oh, in Groovy, you wouldn't use the keyword function. That would probably be a closure, and you would just be iterating over that, and you could yield back. For me, it makes more sense in another language. But looking at it here, especially with that example, it wasn't clear. Like saying this is a function. Well, is it really? Is it going to execute when you call it, or is it executing when it's being dealt with in the for each loop? That is not at all clear as to what the intention is.
Yeah, it's confusing. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have to wait and see, because this is planned for PHP 5.5. I don't know if this is of a great use, because in the end it will probably act like the regular iterator interface. I'll have to admit that I'm probably misunderstanding something here. Maybe this is much simpler than it looks like. And let's move on to the next topic. And whoever wants to inspect more on this topic, there will be a link in the show notes, as usual, to get more information. And moving on, what I would like to cover next, it's more about actually an article that I wrote a few days ago. Well, today is Monday 30th, so like 4 days ago. And this article is basically to comment a bit about the state of the browsers, specifically the state of the Chrome browser. And the article is a follow-up of another article that I wrote last year, which is called Top 10 Reasons Why Firefox is Still Better Than Chrome for Web Development. And the article just updates, this time updates the chart with the progress of the market share of the browsers, showing that basically Chrome increased by over 10% since last year, and while Firefox lost like a similar number, 9.5%. Internet Explorer also lost a bit, although this share is very small. And when I mean this share, I mean among the web developers. Basically, I took the statistics of the PHP Classes site, specifically the users that have logged in the site in the last month, and extracted these values that show that Chrome is increasing a lot. The article also shows a chart from StatCounter, which is a site that keeps track of the statistics of sites, and it shows that globally Chrome has already catch up even Internet Explorer probably about I think May or June, and it keeps growing. And well, what matters to us is web for web developers is that at least in some points Firefox is still better, but Chrome has improved a lot. And this article actually came after I have met a Googler in an event that I attended recently. It was not really for developers, the event itself, but Renato Manghini, from the Google Chrome Developers Relation, was there in that event. He gave a presentation about Chrome and actually told him about this article of the top 10 reasons why Firefox is still better. And he wanted to know about it. So I sent him the article, and then replied in a very short notice telling about features that already overcome some of the problems, and as well with suggestions of how to work around some of the other limitations that Chrome itself does not overcome. And I think it was very interesting, this dialogue, if I can call it a dialogue, seeing that Google has now even a dedicated person to actually interact with the community of developers, and showing interest on seeing what are the limitations that Chrome still has, and what are the concerns of the web developers. But the fact is that Chrome still has some deficiencies. Sometimes it's not exactly in the features, but in the way the features are provided. They are sort of hidden in sometimes in configuration tabs that you need to realize they are there, unless you never know and never take advantage. One of the features that he mentions is the I didn't know that if you want to access a page and make and force the browser to retrieve it from the server as opposed to retrieve it from the browser cache, you can use the shift key when you use the reload button. But how would I know about that feature if nobody else told me about? Because the user interface does not suggest anything.
You're bringing up an interesting point about how would we know, and I think that was mimicked. Can you still hear me?
Yes, sure.
Yeah, I think that was mimicked from IE from some years ago, that shift F5 or shift reload would load from the server rather than from the cache. So they're copying a previous thing. But where did people learn that from? Which actually brings up a bigger issue to me of, it's kind of related, kind of not, but how do we learn anything? I come, and I think you probably somewhat come from the age where you'd go to a store and you'd buy some software, and it would have a manual, and it would say, to do this, press this button, and to do this, choose this menu. We don't get that anymore. We don't get anything. Yeah. The fact that there's books called The Missing Manual means that we're acknowledging there are no manuals. We just have to discover stuff based on convention. And yes, things like having the internet around has made it easier for people to ask or people to publish, well, here's how I learned this and here's how I learned that. But unless you have something in the interface or hey, a help file. I mean, Chrome and these browsers have help files, and yet I don't see any of these tips and tricks even added to their help files. Why, you know, yes, don't you could say don't have 50 buttons because that clutters up the interface, but they could deliver tutorials that come with the browser in form of help files. Hey, if you want to do this, do this. And I'll tell you what would be really interesting for them to do is actually keep stats on who clicks what in the help files and look at what people are searching for in their own help files. Keep track of that. Yeah, it's great that I get my crash log stuff reported back to Mozilla or Chrome or Safari, but I don't really, I don't want a crash. I would rather not have a crash. And there's still a lot of things that they don't get sent back in terms of figuring out what my discovery process is and how to use their browser. So you know, it's kind of a meta topic, but how do we know to do anything in a browser? How do we know to do anything in software?
Well, there are some improvements. Well, I was not aware but that IE shortcut because I do not use Windows, or at least regularly.
Yeah.
And I do not use IE, so I would not know about that. But still, I think the button of reloading could show at least some hint in the tooltip that if you hold key, the key to clear the cache. Could be, I think. It could be more useful for that.
It would be, but there would be people complaining that, well, I don't understand this and I don't understand that. I would say, I still maintain, just put a help file. I'm in a browser right now, and I go to help and nightly help. There's not enough there, I should say. And some of this, too, is that I'm also using, like, the help is all on their page, on their server, as opposed to something that's local. So if one of the problems I'm having is network connections, I would have a problem there. But, looking at the Firefox help, it actually does look like there's some things here, but I would be curious to know if there is, I'm going to look here and see if I can see something for shift.
I think Google people suppose everybody is on Google Fiber with 1 gigabit network that never stops.
I'll tell you one other thing that just came up today, about an hour ago, I saw this. There was an article on Hacker News, and I sent you the link to this in the chat. And that is about Chrome, and this is a bug report. Now, someone else wrote back and said, I can't recreate this, but somebody's reporting that Chrome treats HTTP deletes as gets. So if you issue a delete to something to the same URL that you already did a get to, it will return the cache result.
Oh, I see.
And whether that one can be done or not, there's a number of people complaining in the story about Chrome does a boatload of caching even where it breaks the HTTP spec.
Do you mean HTTP deletes done from JavaScript, right?
Yes. Well, or HTTP delete requests. Yeah. And I think there is something there. Chrome has said for years, oh, we're the fastest browser. Well, when you excessively cache so much, even to the point of breaking the specs, is that a useful browser? And for some uses, it is. But that's another one of those things from a developer standpoint. I'd be wary of saying, I'm going to do all my testing in Chrome, all my development in Chrome first and foremost, knowing that there's aggressive caching going on if I'm trying to do complex stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe, I don't know if you could add that to the show notes or not, but it was an interesting kind of side discussion, which kind of ties
in. Send me the link, and I'll post in the show notes because... Well, we know that browsers have bugs. There is no bug-free browser, but
Links
even Google, good. Because Google is not God, so they are allowed to have bugs in their software. We should not pick more on Google than on others, in my opinion, just because they are wealthy and they have trillions of developers working on their product.
No, but if one of their selling points, one of their marketing points is speed, but they if they're actually achieving that speed at the expense of following written specs and breaking things that work in other browsers,
that's not right.
Fundamentally, Microsoft could say, well, we do all this stuff. We're great at this, but they broke basic conventions. People pilloried Microsoft and said, IE sucks. We're not going to use it. Well, why should Chrome get away with the same behavior? And I'm not saying it's necessarily on the same scale, but gone unchecked, there'd be nothing to stop them from taking that same approach.
Right. So you are anticipating that Google will be the next Microsoft?
Well, I think in some ways they are, but that's probably a discussion for a different podcast.
I mean, in the sense that because Microsoft for many years stopped in IE6, many developers start hating them with a passion. I mean,
possibly that could happen. It could certainly happen where Chrome is gaining a lot of users and a lot of mind share. But if they don't treat developers right, and there's going to be backlash. And that's the same thing with Firefox or Opera or anything. If somebody gains market share, but they don't treat the developers right, there will be a backlash, and it may take years for that backlash to have a strong impact. I mean, there was a big mental backlash against IE for several years, but it took years of people pushing out alternatives and getting a lot of ground support for people installing Firefox on families' machines and pushing it out.
The statistics mentioned in that article pretty much show that only 7% of the developers that were considered for these statistics use IE, but that's not because they do not use Windows. Over 80% use Windows.
Yeah.
So from those 80%, only 7 use Internet Explorer is pretty significant. And if Microsoft did not get the message by now, I don't know if they will ever get.
I think they have it, and IE9 is somewhat better. Everything is somewhat better than the one before it. It's not just enough for them to say, this version is better than the one before it.
Yeah.
Their pace of change has to keep up with the pace of change from other competitors. But again, kind of a topic for a different... I mean, it's web stuff, but it's not quite PHP stuff.
Well, anyway, the message of the article is, on one side, things are improving in Chrome in terms of the issues that were mentioned in the last year, but there are still even more issues to be fixed and addressed with more consistency. That's what we hope. Because I want to make clear, the article itself is not just an exercise of criticism. It's just a sort of a call for help, because I use Chrome. I only use Chrome. If I have to use Firefox, it is bad for me, not because of Firefox, but because I have to stop to use one browser to use the other, and it's not very productive. And since I switched to Chrome 2 years ago, I don't want to go back, especially because Chrome is still much faster, although Firefox has still been making a lot of important improvements. One which is probably not in the way the browser looks or works is the support for the SPDI protocol, which is basically what we are going to get for HTTP2. And for years, Chrome supported the SPDI protocol, which makes the access to the servers, at least those that run on that protocol, like those from Google. I also think of those from Amazon and Twitter and many other sites are already using SPDI, and the access to those sites using SPDI is much faster. So a browser that does not embrace SPDI will look slower, although the browser itself is not slow, it's just the way the protocol works.
Yeah.
And then now Firefox, since a few months ago, has finally support for SPDI. Yeah. So that perception of a browser being slow is not so much evident as in the past. And the conclusion that I take of this is it's all positive, this competition between browsers, I think.
Yeah, everything gets better for all of us over the long term, but we have to make. I run multiple browsers. I've got Firefox and Chrome and Safari all up right now, so
yeah,
I can juggle.
You are having fun in.
Oh, I'm having
switching.
Loads of fun. This is nerdvana. My goodness,
nerdvana. That's good.
That's a good one. I don't even want to leave the chair now. I'm just.
You are enjoying all the tabs in your desktop to switch between browsers.
Oh, man, stop. I'm going to have to shut the camera off in a minute. You keep talking like that.
Okay. Well, anyway, I think this topic would have a lot more to say, but we don't have the time. But I don't know if you wanted to compliment with anything else.
About that or about something else?
No, about this topic.
Oh, no. This topic is... Pretty well much. And truly dead. Yes.
Yeah, actually, we also covered it in the lately in JavaScript podcast.
But I went a different direction there. Totally different direction. Yes.
Okay.
I'm like that.
But talking also about JavaScript, we actually this time we did not quite determine what would be the objects, the classes to talk about in the next section, which is about the latest JavaScript objects published in the JS Classes site. But I think
it's such a shame that there's not this thing that we can, this idea that we can just look at them right now. Maybe we could schedule it for next week. Of course, we can go to the website and
we
talk
can
about
because,
something.
Yes. Because they are pretty much in my... my front.
Yeah.
And I don't know if would you like to start and talk about the same classes? There are just a few published more since then.
About JavaScript? Is JavaScript stuff? I thought you wanted to talk about the PHP classes.
No. Yeah. Well, usually we also cover here a couple of JavaScript classes, also to encourage developers to also go there. And the idea is just that we can just if you would not like to pick others, you can just talk about the same very briefly.
I will mention one that I actually have the demo up of right now. This was what I talked about before. I'm going to share my screen. Yo-ho. Can I call you? I shouldn't call you that. That's rude, isn't it? That is so rude of me. What? What? Come on! I said share the screen share. Why did it go away? Screen share.
Yeah.
There we go.
It's one of those bugs of them.
Yeah. Okay. I have clicked it. Share selected window. There we go. This is Image Cropper from Daniel Martinez in España. Hola, Daniel. Standard. I mean, it's standard. Not that. You should know how to do this in 2 seconds. But the standard kind of UI of I need to move this around. I need to shrink this, and you can move around so you can it grays out or darkens the image behind us. You can see the image up front, and then you can get the values here as a JavaScript array or a JavaScript JSON structure. So it's a basic piece of functionality, but it's actually something that you don't get in a lot of JavaScript toolkits or GUI toolkits. So if you needed to build this yourself, you've already got a class to do this. And it's I'm no expert in this, but it did appear to me to be cleanly written and understandable. So that would be one of the things I would point out from this.
Yes, it's very useful for many purposes now that everybody is accessing sites that need to use pictures, but sometimes they need to be at a specific size.
Yep.
And I think that that component also allows you to restrict the size that is meant to be accepted.
So it won't go over certain,
So it's I think it's useful also in that purpose. And other than that, any other class you would like to mention?
I probably cannot remember enough of what I talked about before, so it'd be just that.
Okay, we also do not that much time, but I'll try to mention a couple, two more. Let me screen share here. One is from Pavel Kukov from Bulgaria, and this is actually a component that has two parts, one JavaScript part and another is a PHP part. But the JavaScript part, what it does is basically to let you set get and delete cookies, values stored in cookies, except that you can store multiple values in a single cookie, and the value itself can have types. So you do not lose the type information like when you store some value in a cookie that always stored as text. And this component from Pavel is useful for some reason. You can only use one cookie to store the values. And then there is the PHP component that it published in PHP classes site that does the other part, which is to decode and also set, get, and delete the values and those cookies.
Sure.
But on the server side. And the other component that I would like to mention is a new component just published by Nguru Mujendi from Kenya. And I always like to highlight when people from Africa are participating because it's not unusual. type of participation. Unfortunately, there are not many developers from African countries. So I also I'd like to highlight that just to encourage more and more from that region, because there is nothing specific about it that prevents to have great developers from there. And in this case, Nguru, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right.
I think that's right. That sounds close.
I'm sure it's wrong, but okay. And basically what they develop, it's a plugin that can show you certain elements that appear tiled on your user interface. And then when you click on them, let's see if I can show you a site that shows that effect. It slides the element and expands with some content. You can have these closed buttons that you can shrink back, and it gives a nice effect. Can cause a good impression if you have one of these components in your site. It's not exactly original. There are similar components for this purpose, but this one gives a good look to your site. And kudos for Nguru for this contribution. And
Thank you. Yes.
And well, but moving on now, I want to talk about the latest nominees. Actually, already announced the results for the, in this case, for the Innovation Award in the PHP Classes site. That of the components that were published in May, they were voted in June, and then in July, it was the announcement of the results. And Michael, I'm not sure if you are accessing this page. I wonder if you would like to pick a couple to talk about.
Well, I'm actually looking at multi-threading one right now.
No, it's probably, well, it's in the winners page.
Oh, I'm sorry. I your page went away for a bit. No, I'm not looking at that. Let me pull up.
It's phpcast.org/winners. Well, while you pick yours, I can go ahead and choose some of
I'm
that
buzzing.
I'd like to highlight. Well, this time we had six nominees, and I like in particular this one from the winner, Tom Schaefer. He has been a regular contributor. He published many components, 31 so far, and he had been nominated like 8 times, and this time there is he finally won, I think it was deserved, because this is a useful component to work with the MySQL Workbench program. It outputs a file that defines the schema of your MySQL database, and what Tom developed was a component to convert the output of MySQL Workbench format into a more usable format that you can use to eventually convert your schemas to do anything useful, like installing the database schema. And this is great contribution from Tom, so kudos to him for this contribution.
There's another one here that's caught my eye, which from Muhammad Arfin, is the basic language parser.
Yeah.
Wow. And
you went back on time.
What? Yeah. It's taken me back just to see that. Wow. And probably
Bill Gates is alive.
Well, it's to look at this old syntax again. Like, yes, I wrote programs that use that. If then else, yeah, we understand that. But this just kind of the basic syntax, the basic BASIC syntax. It's just bringing back a lot of memories. And what's funny to me now is looking at this, and I'm not trivializing what Muhammad's done, but I understand enough about programming that I follow the class. I can understand what he's doing and how he's doing it. And I could probably write something similar now, but I wouldn't be able to write it in Z80 assembler or whatever it was that these people wrote these things back in the 70s.
Yeah.
So it's really easy to look at it when you're looking at PHP source code to say, well, here's how to parse out this string, and here's how to say, is it this token or that token? It's if not trivial, it's certainly easy to understand. But I look back and think, well, gosh, people did this in like 1K of assembly code back 40 years ago. So it just took me back down memory lane to a simpler time, a gentler time.
Yeah. So you had a nostalgic moment.
Yes, I did. I did. Thank you, Muhammad.
Yeah. And well, although it is a parser for a very small subset of a basic. Basic is very powerful. Many commands.
Yeah.
Well, I think JavaScript is the basic of the modern age. And although the languages are different, the purpose of simplifying programming is interesting. Although I do not see much use for a basic interpreter these days, it's still interesting to see these components.
No, but It kind of touches on a larger topic of DSL, domain-specific languages, and not suggesting that necessarily this basic language parser would be something you'd want to use in business production, but it should give you some ideas that you can give people tools to express themselves in with particular domain syntax and parse that out and into your own language of choice. So you know, that in and of itself is a very hot topic and a very powerful topic in a lot of businesses. So, you know, if something like this was to inspire somebody to look more at what are DSLs, how would I write them, how would I incorporate them, I think that has long-term merit.
Well, after all, you could build a DSL for those that are not familiar with domain-specific languages. Those are used to sort of script, can be used to sort of script applications for specific tasks.
Yeah.
Okay, any other class that you would like to mention, Mark?
Well, the two kind of jumped out at me, and not so much for the code, but more just for the fact that they're similar. Web Thumbnail and GrabZit, both of these are classes that make API calls to web services that get grab screenshots. And I don't know if there's a... Pardon me, I have hiccups. I don't know if there's just a big call for that still these days, or if it was just happenstance that happened. But it kind of caught my eye that were two different libraries that do similar things there.
Mm. Yeah, no. Well, actually, I think there is a great demand for this type of classes because these are not really innovative on purpose, just in approach. There were, I think, a few published before that will allow to capture screens from browsers, mm-hmm. but they used browser APIs to actually capture the screens. And I think there is one for IE, another for Firefox, and probably another for that relies on GTK, which is something that probably will only run on well on Linux. Anyway, these two actually they are very similar. They just use different web services for capturing the screens.
Yeah.
But they do basically the same. But since they were published on the same month, they were both nominated. And is basically it. I'll just like to also mention one more. Well, actually, there were six, and I'd like to mention the JForm validator, which is a sort of a different way to define validation rules for forms, in this case on the server side. They use the HTML templates, the forms and parse them to extract elements of the rules. This case, this JForm validator was developed by Jonas Lagerwall from Sweden, and it is an interesting way. Although I'm not sure if mixing the logic in the output template with the output template in the same file is a good idea, but still a non-innovative approach. Other than that, there was only one that we did not mention. Actually, we mentioned before SCSU because it was a class that also has a JavaScript version published by Alexei Znaev from Russia. And this one is the PHP version of the other one that was published in JavaScript. Well, on this part of the Innovation Award, I just would like to mention very briefly. Let me see if I can go back to the screen. Stop the screen sharing here because sometimes it does not work very well. Okay. Well, as you may have noticed, there are some. Elephants. This is the newer version. It just arrived. A set of packages with lots of elephants. And this one, this is the new version. This is the design. Let's see if I can put it. Let me go farther.
That's close enough. Yes.
Yeah. Can you see it? Well,
I can see
side,
it.
It has the PHP logo.
That's cute.
And this one is the version that from now on the PHP Classes site will give away to the Innovation Award winners in the case the year award after summing all the points next year. The winner will get one of these. And the current year, well, actually the past year winner, which got the prize, will get the prize this year, Richard Kaiser. I mentioned about his work in the previous podcast. Will also get one of these. As well, the five top ranked winners of the JavaScript Innovation Award Challenge that is going on, and it will last until the JS Classes site reaches 200 packages. After that, the Innovation Award will be started in that site. So as encouragement, there is this preparation phase on which encouragement to developers to submit interesting JavaScript classes, and there is this prize for the top five winners. It's a bit hard giving away a PHP related prize to JavaScript developers, but unfortunately there are no, as far as I know, there is no mascot for JavaScript.
That's so, your job to make one.
Yeah, I'm thinking about hiring Ifat. Ifat Amita is the designer that created these elephants. A lot of people like them. I hope this first release of the mascot in plush will look fine. Michael, yours is in the mail.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
merci.
I hope you exhibit it with pride. It's just a symbolic prize that I don't like to give
no,
to
it's
you
a real
for.
Part. Thank you, thank you
for being such a enthusiastic
and good looking.
That too, of course. Yeah, that would be the opinion about your wife, of course.
No, no.
And all those millions of fans, of course.
Yeah.
Well, and anyway, I'd like to just conclude this podcast. I think you, Michael, you'd like to talk also about an event that you have been organizing. It's growing every year, I think. IndieConf, right?
Well, that's the hope. IndieConf is a conference for web freelancers. I say web freelancers. It's designers, developers, anybody in between. If you make a living on the web, full-time or part-time, or you're interested in it, we want to have you. The focus the last couple of years has been people, you know, a lot of people like me who are primarily developers of some sort, but we're we've had people who are writers. We've had sessions on publishing. We do a one-day conference, and we've got some tech. We've got some stuff, but it's all about, largely about sessions and people and lessons to help you get better at running your business, whether it's marketing or legal or financial or business. The tech stuff, some of that, but you know how to connect to a database. You know how to put something on the screen with JavaScript. Yeah. And if you don't, you probably know where to go. You probably have a harder time figuring out how should I write my contracts and things like that. So that's been the motivation behind IndieConf. And actually, for the next 2 weeks through August 15th, we have a call for papers open. The conference is November 17th in Raleigh, North Carolina. So we're looking to get a number of speakers. And we have we're going to have probably 20 or 21 different sessions, and as it stands right now, we possibly have them all filled, but I would rather get more topics in so that we have a better choice to select from.
Yeah, this seems to be an unusual type of conference, right? It's for developers, but it's not so much about development.
It's not just for developers. If you're a graphic designer, we've had people who are primarily front-end CSS people or graphic design people, and they work for themselves, and they have the same kind of questions that we're all in the web creative space, whether you're creating databases or you're creating something else, but we're in this space. And how do you find work? How do you find people that you could subcontract work to? How do you write contracts? How do you get paid? How do you avoid getting stiffed? All of these things are very common to people who work for themselves. So that's really what the conference is about.
Right. I think it's quite valuable to.
I think so.
Well, talking about values, do you have early bird fees?
Right now, the early bird through the call for speakers. It's a 1 day event. It's $79. After that, it's going to go up to $99, and then we'll have that. That's kind of traditional early bird up through probably end of October, and then it'll go to $129 for the stragglers.
Right, but. And it doesn't seem to be expensive, right?
It's not. And actually, these are the prices from 2 years ago. Last year we bumped the prices a little bit. I've bumped them down a little bit this year. Next year we may go higher again, because I think, especially for people, if you're coming in from out of town, if you're flying in or driving in and getting a hotel, whether it's a $100 ticket or a $150 ticket, probably doesn't factor that much into a $300 plane ticket and a couple hundred dollars in hotels. It's not that much of an issue, I think. But that said, I would rather try to keep this low, especially for people that are, if you're thinking of maybe you're not happy and you're thinking of going on your own, or you're looking at doing freelancing part-time, this is not the sort of conference where, hey, my company will send me and it's $1,200 and they'll fly me out to Oregon or something. It's intended for people who are self-employed. So I try to keep that in mind, that you're footing the bill for this. I'm trying to make it as affordable as possible.
Right. Well, I think that is great, I think you're right on, because there is a demand for that. In the end, hopefully, more professionals will learn about making more money more efficiently. I think that is the value that I see in your event. So congratulations for the idea.
Thank you. I mean, gracias. I know that's Spanish. You speak Portuguese, but whatever.
Well, one day you'll get
one
it
day
right.
I'll get it. No, probably not.
Okay, that's fine. Well, we had a great show this time with a special K. Michael, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
This time sort of came to fill in the space of Hernani that is...
Get well, big. Hernani. Yes, get well.
But you are always welcome to give your insights here, because I think even before you were a JavaScript developer, you were a PHP developer, right?
Oh, yeah. I've been PHP for too long. So.
Yeah. Well, maybe next time we have to also have more time to talk about other interesting work of yours, like JS Magazine. But for that, for now, people can listen also to the Lately in JavaScript podcast. So for this episode, on my part, I think that's all for now.
Sounds good. Bye. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.